Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Saturday morning Bible study class, and thank you all for joining us on this beautiful day in New Jersey. We are recording today from the North Star Cottage, and sadly, Tom isn't with us this morning, but gladly, Linda will be our moderator.
Yes, good morning. I'll start by reading hymn number 148 from the Christian Science Hymnal. It's In Heavenly Love Abiding by Anna Letitia Waring. In heavenly love abiding, no change my heart shall fear. And safe is such confiding, for nothing changes here. The storm may roar without me, my heart may low be laid. But God is round about me, and can I be dismayed? Wherever he may guide me, no want shall turn me back. My shepherd is beside me, and nothing can I lack. His wisdom ever waketh, his sight is never dim. He knows the way he taketh, and I will walk with him. Green pastures are before me, which yet I have not seen. Bright skies will soon be o'er me, where darkest clouds have been. My hope I cannot measure, my path in life is free. My Father has my treasure, and he will walk with me.
Thank you.
So our topic is, the Lord will watch over you. And the text was Psalm 121, 1 through 8. And the first question was, what do we know about Anna Letitia Waring?
And if there were any comments about,
I'm sorry,
about
yes.
the hymn.
Yes, definitely.
Well, I think it was just so wonderful how close the hymn was tied to Psalm 23.
You mean 121?
Psalm 121.
No, the hymn that was read, to me, very much followed Psalm 23.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Well,
that's
she did write a book of poems on the Psalms, and some of her hymns and her writings were based on the Psalms, so that
it's clear that this one was inspired by the 23rd Psalm.
Yes.
And just reading this poem that you put to our hymn, the sense that I got was, the writer was very clear and calm and confident about her position with our Lord and Master, our God, because there's nothing here that's disturbed, even though the earth may disturb the person, try to, yet she is totally at peace and confident with her God. And I got this sense that she is very clear about the presence and guidance of our God.
Thank you.
Yeah, and she's also very hopeful, right?
Yeah.
In other words, she hasn't seen any green pastures yet, but she knows she's going to. She hasn't seen any bright skies yet because it's been pretty dark. But she knows she's going to. She knows all this because God has told her. I mean, this is a woman who was a contemporary of Mrs. Eddy.
Yeah.
I don't know how of Mrs. Eddy's writings influenced her, but she was, you know, she was a contemporary.
Yeah, they were only a year apart.
Yeah, she died the same year she died. Mm-hmm. Mrs. Eddy died. She really was a well-sport. There's so much on her in Wikipedia. Wikipedia, yeah. And she did a lot of work. I love what she did as a philanthropist, you know, included discharged prisoners. She, you know, did work with them, which is very nice. Mm-hmm.
It also says that she learned Hebrew.
Excuse me?
I had read that she learned Hebrew for the purpose of being able to read the Old Testament in its original form.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, who has not gained great comfort from this poem or this hymn in times of trouble?
God. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If there's any of us here who don't turn to the hymnal, and certainly this beautiful one, especially as Gary says, when you can't see the light of day, but you're trusting God that you will, it will come forth.
Yeah, and, that line.
Sorry. Go ahead.
No, the line, the storm will roar without me, that in itself, that's enough. I mean, that's amazing so many times. Yes.
Thank you. Yeah. Barth and I are always quoting it to each other.
Yeah. And then in even all this, she says she'll walk with him.
No, yeah, absolutely. What. Total 100% faith. Now, Carrie, in looking up from newspaper articles, found out this about Anna, Letitia Waring, that she was born in Glamorganshire, Wales, 1823, second daughter of Elijah and Deborah Waring, members of the Quakers. She left the Quakers in 1840 and was baptized in the Church of England at Winchester in 1842. She never married, of a sensitive and shy frame, lived with her three sisters, worked with the Discharged Prisoners Aid Society, which Florence mentioned. In 1850, she published a little volume, Hymns and Meditations, which went through 16 editions. In 1858, she published additional hymns. Her hymns, Father, I Know That All My Life, and My Heart Is Resting, were both favorites of Charles Spurgeon. She wrote her heart into her hymns. And G.A. Crawford of England says Miss Waring's hymns are marked by great simplicity, concentration of thought, and elegance of diction. They are popular and deserve to be so. And she passed away in her 90th year. So, you know, we would never know this if we didn't have the Bible studies. And
she also wrote a little book of common prayers book for the common people, so they would have the ability to read and have prayers. At her time, I don't think they had access to books like that. And
yeah.
I thought that was thinking much about her fellow citizens and those who need.
Yeah. She was very, you know, holy, spiritually minded woman. And and what she gave us continues to this day.
Yeah. I
found.
If you didn't know better, you could have thought Mary Baker Eddy wrote that hymn.
True.
Right. It was just perfect.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, it shows that the truth was at work throughout the world, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. There were people in England who were catching glimpses of the truth, being inspired by the truth. So, you know, which shows that the world was ready for Christian Science at that time. I mean, things don't happen by chance, right?
No.
Things happen.
And there's only one, right? So, I mean, when we're knowing that one is all a part of our own being, then it's not surprising to see that it is.
Exactly.
I'm sure it's happening everywhere in this universe of our Father.
Yeah, yes, it is. I found in studying for this Charles Spurgeon's sermon on Psalm 121 very helpful, the whole thing. You know how verbose he is, but he has wonderful things to say. But he told this little story that I thought went with this hymn. It goes with Psalm 121 as well. And yeah, Debbie's also Psalm 23. Sorry, I missed that. But anyway, he writes, a number of years ago, Captain D commanded a vessel sailing from Liverpool to New York. And on one voyage, he had all his family with him on board the ship. One night, when all were quietly asleep, there arose a sudden squall of wind, which came sweeping over the waters until it struck the vessel, and instantly threw her on her side, and tumbling and crashing everything that was movable, and awaking the passengers to a consciousness that they were in imminent danger. Everyone on board was alarmed and uneasy, and some sprang from their berths and began to dress, that they might be ready for the worst. Captain D had a little girl on board, just 8 years old, who of course awoke with the rest. "What's the matter?" said the frightened child. They told her a squall had struck the ship. "Is father on deck?" said she. "Yes, father's on deck." And then the little thing dropped herself on her pillow again without a fear. In a few minutes, she was sweetly sleeping in spite of the winds and the waves. And then, "Fear not the windy tempest wild. Thy bark they shall not wreck. Lie down and sleep, O helpless child. Thy father's on the deck." Mm-hmm. That was so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And you know, to ask yourself, and do you have that trust? Middle of a storm, the little girl, as long as her father was on deck, she was fine. She went right back to sleep. And didn't we see that with the Christ on the storm? Right. No, he was asleep. Everyone else was so terrified. And he had such confidence in God. They were there rocking and rolling around in the wind and the storm. So remember, there is this presence ever with you. It's not some fictitious thing we Christians have made up. It's not. It's real. Our God is real. He's with us. So anyone else on that?
I was just thinking too, you know, Elijah was fearful, was running from Ahab and Jezebel, and you had the storms that passed before him, and, you know, God wasn't in any of that. And then you heard the still small voice. It was required great peace to get to that state of thought, to not be moved by all the thunderings around you.
Thank you.
Real sense of it, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
When you're right in the thick of it, when you're really in the thick of it, these hymns and these stories really resonate and you remember them.
Thank you.
And I'm also learning that to find that peace and stay in that peace requires great courage.
Yeah, it requires the courage to obey the first commandment, no matter what, that you won't have any other gods before the one God. And sometimes that takes a lot of courage, especially when everyone's telling you everything else.
Well, it requires at least faith. And it's helpful to have understanding as well, isn't it, doesn't it?
Yes.
Which is why it's so important to educate our children to the truth when they're young, because it comes naturally and they can't lose it once they have it.
It's very important they have this sound background, if you will, or whatever, because they are getting it elsewhere in their music, in their movies, in everything, cartoons, they're getting it elsewhere, that false beliefs in a power definitely apart from God, and even anti-Christian now is, of course, being sent out to our youth. So you must ground them as parents, as friends, as neighbors, or whatever you are,
teachers.
So anyway,
even the public schools, we know reports about what's going on there. It's not good.
It is not good. No. And if they don't get it, they're not going to get it. So
I found that she wrote lessons for children and hymns in prose for children. And she said about the prose, the particular design of this publication is to impress devotional feelings as early as possible on the infant mind. According to according to what she said, a child ought never to remember the time when he did not feel the full force of God. Under the influence of Joseph Priestley, she recommended habitual devotion to remind the child of reason, that nothing happens without God.
That's beautiful.
Yes, where did you get that? Send that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was wikipedia.org.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Jeremy will find it.
We'll see if we can find the books.
Mrs. Eddy wrote it? Who wrote it, Dan?
No, Warren.
Yes, Anna Letitia Warren.
Oh, Warren wrote it.
Oh, yeah, wow.
She wrote two books.
That's wonderful. Children. Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm. It
would be interesting to have the book title.
It would be good to have the book. Jeremy will find it. And and yes, we'll get that, because that is wonderful. Thank you very much, Dale.
It's obvious that Letitia Waring had a gift in her poetry, because the content of it is so devotional, simple, easy to understand, but so pure and good. And she was devoted to doing it. So it was quite a remarkable example. I'm so glad we had this opportunity to look her up and find out what she did.
Yeah, and I'm sure she had a very God-based childhood.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She had a father and an uncle that were also verse makers and devoted to the church and religion and serving the community thereby. So she was brought up with it.
Good.
Well, going back to the topic on children, I love in The Chosen how Mary, she had the phrases from the Bible, and I believe it was Psalms, that came back to her all the time and kept her. And I think with children, even if they seem like they're not listening, they're getting it. They're getting it, and it'll come back to them too when they need it. And it's you know, it's a necessity.
Mm-hmm.
Really.
Thank you. Yes. Yep. Pardon me.
You never really lose it if it's instilled in you as a child.
They are little sponges soaking it up. Anyone else who didn't speak, who wanted to speak about anything so far? Bruce?
No, that's good.
Okay.
We'll go on to the second question. It says, what are the songs of Ascent?
These psalms, I think it's Psalms 120 to 134, also are called songs of degrees, I believe. And I'd always wondered about that. You'd see a song of degree, and I wasn't really sure what that was. So I was kind of glad this question came up. But the songs of Ascent, I think, are related to the psalms that they would sing on their journeys to Jerusalem for various festivals that would come up. I think there's three or four of them where they would all travel to Jerusalem. And they are sometimes called pilgrim psalms because many believe they were sung by faithful worshipers traveling up to the temple during the feast. But when they call them songs of ascent, it's not just going up a mountain. It's going up in thought. And I thought that was a really good thing that Tom asked a question about.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, this journeying at that time, sometimes it wasn't always the safest thing to do. You know, pick up all your things and start traveling. So they had to have something to take with them to secure their journey and anticipation of their destination. And these are very sacred things that they did. I know we're going to talk about Psalm 121, but I couldn't help but notice in number 122, there was a sacred prayer, a prayer for the peace of Jerusalem and for the prosperity of it. And it was done for the sakes of those that were there and for their journey. So it was an unselfish prayer. And I can't imagine people on their journey doing this unselfishly, praying for the peace of Jerusalem and the safety of everyone going there.
I am so incredibly impressed by the Jewish people and their faithfulness, they're living these psalms. They live them, they apply them everywhere they go, and you do see it in the Chosen. You know, they, as I've said, they don't eat an apple without thanking God for the fruit of the vine. They don't leave their house without, you know, kissing the door. a prayer among everything to keep God close. It's quite an example. It really is quite an example. How do we see this when you're boarding the plane? Do you see everybody lining up, singing psalms and praying for their journey? We don't see that.
Yeah.
No? If anything, everybody's afraid of this or afraid of that.
Right.
How much better we all would be if this was happening and going on. And I really hope, pray that you all, when you travel, that you do this psalm, the Psalm 121 that we're going to talk about, but it's one of the major psalms, 91, 23, 27, 121. You should have it in your heart, these psalms. And when you ever travel, you're coming in, going out, you should be thinking on these things, not worried about this, that, and the next thing, but filling your thought with the truth. This is taking the offensive with the truth, not waiting till you get knocked over and are crying, but living it. And not just the words, but feeling it. Mrs. Eddy said you should take 2 hours at least each day until you get on the right side of your feelings, that you're not fearful anymore, that you're not worried about everything. You've got to really get into it. And if you've got to get up earlier in the morning to do it, you should. You wake up often in the night. Instead of worrying about things, why not pray, declare the truth, get yourself grounded, and get rid of fear. And Psalm 121, if that doesn't, I don't know what will. And so, Gary, you read what Mrs. Eddy says about travel.
Well, Mrs. Eddy wrote to a student, quote, "Remember that unless you travel mentally, that if you don't traverse new lands spiritually, if you don't cross metaphysical waters, that is, and reach shores hitherto unvisited in soul, you have wasted your time, money, and effort, and you will get nothing out of it. Don't do less science, but more. May God unfold you in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake, where no evil, no accident, no allurements, no blame lies, claiming some world more dazzlingly beautiful than the radiance of divine love, for straight is the gate and narrow the way thereto." End quote.
Thank you. Anytime you travel, you should be working with this.
You should feel as though you are sent by God to wherever you're going. Because if you're not, you're wasting your time, your money, and your effort. And you'll, at the very best, you'll get nothing out of it. And it might turn out even worse than that.
Yes. I used to wonder why I would be so anxious when I traveled until I learned this. Because I would be, and I'd come home crazy as a bedbug usually. It didn't do me much good. Because you're out with foreign thoughts, all kinds of people thinking all kinds of things, all kinds of things going on. And unless you are grounded in this truth and working, you know, it can sweep you away. I'm grateful for the times we traveled with Mrs. Evans, because, boy, on the plane, we were to be studying and praying and working. Yes, not just looking and goggling at the outside the plane or train or car or wherever we were. It was always a time of prayer. And then, yes, enjoyment, seeing new places. Of course, all that's important, too. But it was God first, last, and always. And it was a wonderful training experience. Linda?
I'd love to share something from Unity of Good, because I think it fits in now what you're saying, the importance of it's in the chapter of Deep Things of God by Mary Baker Eddy. And I'll just read part of it. Quote, science reverses the evidence of the senses in theology on the same principle that it does in astronomy. Popular theology makes God tributary to man, coming at human call, whereas the reverse is true in science. Men must approach God reverently, doing their own work in obedience to divine law, if they would fulfill the intended harmony of being. And then there's one line down a little farther. It says, to him there is no moral inharmony, as we shall learn proportionately as we gain the true understanding of deity, end quote. This whole book of Unity Good has...
Thank you.
Can I say something?
Of course.
You just did.
I've regretted I didn't get on at the beginning, because I really had a very soft feeling for this hymn. I was not brought up a Protestant, and so I had never heard this hymn. And when I first started attending Christian Science Church, this one really stood out to me, and it really touched my heart and comforted me. And one of the things that was given to think about was some comments on the psalm. And it says, this psalm teaches us to comfort ourselves in the Lord. He never sleeps or slumbers. Put yourselves under his protection. And I thought that is exactly what her hymn does. And I also remember my little grandson, whenever he had this blue blankie, and whenever he was uncertain or whatever, he would put that blankie over his head and feel comforted. And that's exactly how I felt when I would sing that. I just felt like a little child, and it put me in a very good place. And I just wanted to share that. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm glad you Also, I didn't bring it, but Florence wrote a really beautiful article about traveling in a car. Do you remember the name of it, Florence? Anyway, it's on our website. And all the things that we should think of and pray about when we're in a car, because you want to speak to it? Florence used to be very nervous.
Yes, I will, because I used to be so terrified, whether I'm driving or somebody else is driving, because I was only looking at, what could happen? And, of course, imagination takes me all the way. There's a big truck coming. It's going to do this. I mean, so frightened, until I learned through science that you pray. You know, you pray for yourself. Pray for everyone. Know that the Christ is there. It's at the helm of everybody's steering, you know, and God will keep everyone in their right lane and all of this. And when I did that one day, when it was stormy, actually, it was some clouds, and then the trucks were coming all over, left side, right side. I was so, and then I kept praying, God is here, you know, everybody is in their right lane. And that was the most harmonious travel or driving I ever did. And since then, I've always done that, always praying, seeing God here and everywhere. And that has changed completely the way I travel. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we were taught here, you don't get into your car without saying God is behind this wheel, behind the wheel of every driver on the road. That's how you start. But then, you know, in this article, Florence, you have, you apply it to all situations. And I know when I'm driving, you can, everyone you pass, hail, Son of God. See everyone around you as a child of God. And if you ever do anything, see erratic driving or something like that, you correct it in your thought. As Florence just said, you know, everyone is under divine guidance.
Yeah. It was kind of funny on the way down here. My passengers they're not used to the heavy traffic or a lot of 18-wheelers coming by and all that stuff. So I said, don't worry. I said, everybody is under God's protection on the highway. Explained it to them. And my friend said, okay, because I'm going to lay down in the back seat. So it was kind of like the story of the little girl on the deck. Yeah, but, you know, once I explained where that God was everybody's mind, and he just got calm with it and lay down in the back seat, and we were fine.
Thank you. That's beautiful.
She was one of those people that just like tried to drive the car on the passenger side, and put her feet through the floor whenever a car came by, and she just went back and lay down on the seat, and she was calm as could be. So.
That's very beautiful. Thank you.
I was just like explaining it to her, and it was all okay. It was like I was really knowing it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I was knowing it for myself because what I'd learned here and with, you know, all the lessons we've learned here, but just to say it enough to her so she would calm down, and she did. So it was
perfect. Of it. In a commentary, there was this about Song of Ascents, as they sung by travelers. And it said that David Livingstone, the famous missionary and explorer of the continent of Africa, read Psalm 121 and Psalm 135, which praises God for his sovereign rule over all things, as he worshiped his father and sister before setting out for Africa in 1840. His mother-in-law, Mrs. Moffat, wrote him at Lignardi that Psalm 121 was always in her mind as she thought about him and prayed for him.
That's beautiful.
That is beautiful. And you can see the harmonious results of people who do this, right? They do great things. You have the power of God with you, aware of it. And what a foolish waste of time just to be worrying when you can be singing a hymn or praising or knowing the truth about whatever situation you're worried about. Okay, are we done with the ascent? Or is there anything more?
Okay, I guess we'll go on to the third question. And the question is, where does help come from? And then it says Psalm 121, line 1. And I wanted to share before we start to talk that it says, I will lift mine eyes unto the hills. And I thought that's really his looking. So I went to 1828 dictionary, Webster's, and looked up the word look. And I was quite interested in seeing that it was very active definitions, like to esteem, to be on watch, the state of expectation, seeking, to seek, to search, to behold with the understanding, or to understand perfectly. We're just a few of the, that's looking with the expectation.
Thank you.
That's a beautiful explanation, because you can just say, oh, look, it can be interpreted as a passive thing.
Right.
But that's not it. It's active. And
yeah, that's different than observe, isn't it? It's like you're not just sitting back and letting things cross in front of you.
Right.
It's more like being on watch guard.
Yes. Yeah, they said watch a couple of times in the definition in different ways. Be watchful.
Yeah, thank you.
It reminds me when I first came to this church a couple of years ago and met Mrs. Evans, and I asked her, well, what's going to be my place in the church? And she looked at me and says, well, we're going to make a watchdog out of you.
Yeah, and that's what everyone needs to be. You can all be watchers. And in doing that work for the world, you are greatly blessed, as those of you that do it have come to find out. You're greatly blessed when you do that work for the world because you are being proactive. Carpenter says it's a Christian Scientist life insurance, because you can't do this work for the world and not, yes, be blessed yourself. It's impossible. When we're handling things like the nameless nothing, you're handling it for the world, but you're also handling it for yourself, and you come out so much stronger for it. So you're not manipulated by the wicked thoughts flying around out there.
Well,
excuse me.
God has given us the ability and energy to do this work. You know what the tendency of the human mind is? It's lazy. It wants to take the easy way. It wants to take the passive way. That's not our position here. God has given each and every one of us a skill and a talent and the energy and ability to do it.
And when you don't do it, you feel very unsatisfied, like you've lost your purpose, because you have. We created us for a purpose, and we have to live up to that purpose. As Bruce just said, we're capable of doing it, and we should do it. And often, if you don't do it, you'll find what happens to you.
Get dragged down by whatever's going on around you.
Yeah, and you'll feel like you lose the ability to do it.
Right.
Yeah. What is it? Use it or lose it?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a word in this first verse of Psalm 121 that speaks to that. Then I will lift. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I will lift up mine eyes. And what does Mrs. Eddy say eyes are?
Spiritual understanding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, spiritual discernment. So I will lift up my spiritual discernment unto the hills. In other words, to spiritual understanding, to God. So, I mean, this is an active thing. This is work. And when we do the work, we get help. We see the light of truth. The darkness gets dissipated. But as was said before, we have to be watchful. We have to be diligent.
And reverent.
Reverent.
Grateful.
Grateful.
And this is a spiritual activity. It has nothing to do with hills and valleys and mountains.
Right.
Yeah.
And we also await.
Hello?
Yeah.
Before we go any further, I just want to correct something that I said. I want to apologize for giving the quote that I did, saying it was from Anna Letitia Waring. When I put her name in, the Wikipedia came up with this quote and saying the book Lessons for Children and also Hymns in Prose for Children, but it was from Anna Letitia Barbauld. And so I apologize for that. It wasn't by the author of the hymn, but I think that those books might be interesting to look into, because it sounds very much like what Mrs. Eddy would have said, but I apologize for the wrong quote.
Thank you for clarifying, because I was looking and I couldn't find it.
So. Thank you. I like in the quote that Tom gave us from Matthew Henry in Psalm 121, where he says, the Lord shall prevent the evil thou fearest, and sanctify, remove, or lighten the evil thou feelest. That's a good calendar quote. The Lord shall prevent the evil thou fearest, and sanctify, remove, or lighten the evil thou feelest. That takes care of whether you're fearing it or feeling it.
Well, and you know, in ancient Israel, when King David was around, you know, there was danger. I mean, they never knew when their neighbors were going to attack them. I mean, it was, you know, life was different then. Just about everybody was a farmer or a rancher, raised their own food. You know, there were people who were hungry who would go steal your crop. So there was danger. It was kind of a, you know, a way of life that people had to get used to. And they had no, you know, police force or army or navy or whatever at the time. So they had God, and they had to cling very tightly. You know, and they would have to take drastic steps sometimes to protect what God gave them. So it was a different kind of life style than we experience today in America or in, you know, developed countries.
In an article that Carrie sent, which is a very important one, by William P. McKenzie, one of our favorite authors, it's called Thy Guard by Night and Day. It's from a 1918 journal. I'd like to share some of it with you. He writes, that sentence, which the chapter entitled Christian Science Practice is concluded on page 442 of Science and Health, was considered vitally important by its author, Mrs. Eddy. She called attention to it at the time of its publication by notice in the Sentinel, and this notice is reprinted for perusal of any reader of the First Church of Christ Scientist Miscellany. On the next page is given the notice published in the Sentinel, requesting that daily attention be given to the teaching of this sentence, which reads, do you know what it is? Christian Scientists, be a law to yourselves that mental malpractice cannot harm you either when asleep or when awake. We have that in our full text too, along with the daily duties. This is a highly important statement to work with. All the times Mrs. Eddy's telling you, don't miss out on this one. It is important. Gary talked about the dangers, you know, the shepherds and all the people had in those days. We've got a different kind of danger, but it's most important you protect yourself from it. And as we talked about at the last roundtable, protection ultimately means that God is all. So you wipe out even that there is any of this, but we're dealing with the relative at the moment, and there would seem to. Then McKenzie goes on. Christian Scientists are sometimes found to express anxiety, even as do those whose portion is worldly. They anticipate evil and worry over what they imagine. They fail to enjoy the glorious liberty of the children of God. Now, it may be that in such cases, Mrs. Eddy's advice is not regarded. And then he goes on to talk about the ancients had evidently strong belief in sleepless evil affecting sleeping mortals. And he talks about this, which is these things, they have names. And Jeremy has published a booklet on them. And they were really the gods of Balaam. And they worshipped and feared them. I mean, these were not good gods. It's not a capital G, many gods. And if you think that those things aren't working around today, they are. Mm-hmm. They are. And if you're asleep to them or not aware of them, you can be handled by them. So thus she gives us that statement. She said, or the article says, and Let one become accustomed to dwelling on divine faithfulness every night, and to be and the dreams that will no longer affright him, nor will their mesmerism affect his day. And we'll see a God of loving kindness. Everyone must also be on his guard by day and by night against the intentional mesmerism of those who have made a study of what they call human psychology. From their careful investigations of human weakness, sin, folly, and pride, they have worked out what they believe to be potent methods for swaying people as individual or in masses by inducing them to believe and accept and fear the mortal mind lie instead of trusting scientific truth. Mrs. Eddy says quite plainly in Science and Health, in reality, there is no mortal mind and consequently no transference of mortal thought and willpower. End quote. In its present phases, psychology claims the exact opposite, denies the presence and action of principle, and claims that human will shall rule the earth. Hmm. Now, isn't this what we see? And this is why, again, to fortify yourself, first yourselves, always yourselves, but then your children. You know, I was reminded recently that when I was a young adult, I became extremely fearful, extremely depressed. And I was a so-called Christian scientist, but I certainly wasn't doing any of this. And I realized, and it was really after I met Mrs. Evans, there was such a clarity about her thought. There wasn't this gray zone, you know, that you accept all this garbage that's out there. It's okay. You got to be part of things. No, it was either right or wrong. And I realized at that time, I was taking in some really awful movies. They were the most depressing movies. And they were depressing me. I was taking them into my thought. It was Elvira Madigan, Midnight Cowboy, Romeo and Juliet. They were just dreadful. Now, if you have a steady diet of this stuff and you are not protecting your thought, then there'll be consequences. And this is true now, today, with our youth, especially the music. They listen to it over and over and over and over again.
Video games.
And this is how this psychology works. Now, this isn't to make you fearful. It's to get you to rise up in rebellion against it.
We recently learned that our public school was showing the children the Hunger Games. I haven't personally seen that. I don't watch stuff like that, but I'm told that it's just horrifying. And to teach kids and desensitize them to these things is just terrible.
Oh, absolutely. No, it's like, it's like who can kill everybody else first before they get killed?
Right.
Yeah.
That's the plot. What kind of a plot is that?
Unreal, yeah. And that anybody pretend this was something necessary for kids to learn in this society.
In school, when there's so much important things to teach them, and someone recently told me his niece was going, I'm sure it was a public school, and she was confused about what sex she was. Okay, and so the parents realized this was going on. They yanked her out, and they put her in a private school, and that nonsense stopped. Now, that to me is proof. This is something very wicked. I don't remember wondering what sex I was. You have to be indoctrinated to some of this foolishness. So this is why the Psalm 121 is so important to work with, but work with actively. Yeah. awake, arise. And, you know, I talk to my children about it. I say, just, you know, be aware, be awake, look what's going on, watch your children, and watch yourself. because as it happened to me, I got all into this, and I was a Christian Scientist at that time, or, you know, one of sorts. But thank God for Mrs. Evans. Boy, did she straighten that out, and fast and quick and with strength and power, and she wasn't taking any of this garbage, and I shouldn't be watching those kind of movies, period. No question. And you know, it all stopped.
You know what? My granddaughter's school, public school now, they allow kids to come in as what they call furries. So they dress up, they think they're animals.
I've heard that.
They're allowed to come in these furry suits, and they have special privileges. It's just ridiculous.
It is like the Emperor's New Clothes. Yeah, I heard that they one place they had to have a kitty litter. Instead of using the bathroom, they used the janitor's closet, and there was a kitty litter in it. Now, what kind of idiotic stuff is this? I mean, we could laugh at it. It is ridiculous.
Well, it's worse than ridiculous. It's wicked.
Wicked. So,
thing to do to a child. The child needs stability and common sense. Yeah, and goodness.
And to learn more about God.
Yes.
And, you you have to vote those crazy people out of the school boards. I know this is, I can't help but hear this because I'm involved in this kind of stuff in a nonprofit where, you know, we're helping to educate citizens as to what to do. And it kind of goes along with what we're saying. You know, people have been lulled into a sense of complacency. They put so much time and energy and effort into taking their kids to, you know, all the sporting events, and yet they totally have avoided looking at what's happening at the local governance.
And thank you very much.
You have to go to your local school board meetings. You got to go to your local city council meetings. And when you hear crazy people saying things, you have to know when the elections come up and vote them out. It's unacceptable. And that's the practical way to manage this, in addition to, you know, the spiritual footsteps.
And what the children see as parents doing is also so important for you.
Most
when they come home, what is my parent doing? They see that too, and they don't forget.
So. Right, because if they're properly grounded at home and in their Sunday school, when they see this kind of crap, they will know that
it's
know for what it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yes, if they see you praying, if they see you turning to God when you have a question, when they hear you talking about God, when they see you living this truth, that is what is very important and will impress them. And it doesn't even have to be a parent. Jeremy will say his grandfather was the only sane thing in his life. And
there's always someone.
There's always someone. God provides always someone to help you. And
be that someone.
Yeah, be that someone. And be that someone. You have to do it for yourself first. You can't be drifting and anxious and taking pills and other things for your problems and then expect your children to know what to do. Mm-hmm. You must be that someone first. Grow up and be that someone. Our future generations rely on it. And again, the Jews in teaching their children and going over the victories, that how God led them through the, you know, Red Sea and all the things that were done and write it on their foreheads. All of those things are very good and important. It's why we have our testimony meetings. But I'm telling you, and what this, because recently, I know many of you know Taylor Swift. Well, recently there's been all this stuff about her new album being anti-Christian. Now, there are parts of it that do sound very anti-Christian, and billions of children listen to her. You can't get too excited about it either. If you do, then your child is going to want to listen to it all the more. But you have to know it's out there and it's being projected to them. I don't know if it's wicked or just ignorant or what it is. It doesn't really matter. But the point is being, they're getting a steady dose of anti-Christian stuff. And some of it maybe is warranted, but that doesn't mean to throw the baby out with the bathwater and to have children be turned off to the Bible and the scriptures and learning about God is not a good thing. So we've got to counteract it in our prayers. And I know several of you who do special prayers for the children. Some of you are led to do special prayers for a lot of different things. Someone recently says they're praying about all the divorces that are going on. They're praying for the sanctity of marriage. Some of you pray for prisoners. Some of you pray for people in hospitals. These are your individual watches. But how important it is, very important that we do this work. That beautiful article, Taking Offense, where Mrs. Eddy says, you know, we have to neutralize what is bitter in this world, right?
Yeah, and neutralize.
Neutralize it.
I like working with Jack's stuff when he's at the house and we have Bible studies or whatever. He'll be up in my room playing or something, and I always tell him, open up my Bible sometimes, and I say, it says right here that God loves Jackson very, very much. He's like all happy around him. Whole attitude. Because he's always wanting to, like, he'll get books out and he'll want me to read books and stuff. And he's more interested in the Bible, like, now, because I tell him that God's telling his story in there and that he loves him very much. And or something else happens and like, God fixed Jackson's toy today so that Jackson would be very happy. And he's like looking at the book, trying to see where God is in there. It's really nice and sweet.
And that's her grandson.
Yeah.
And that's what you do. Linda says it calls it taking Sunday school moments through the day.
That's right.
Opportunities.
And then later on, when this little child is exposed to things that disparage Christianity or Christian Science, will think, Luann's not like that.
Yeah.
So this can't be true.
Yeah.
And that's really the only way we can combat this.
He's always looking at my phone because I have the picture of Jesus with the lamb. And he's always like, come and get my phone, and he turns it on and the little finger poking at it. It's so funny. I said, who is that? He'll go, Jesus. No.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's just how you do it. That's being it, living it. She does it in her pottery classes too. Mm-hmm. She tells people to shut up and sit down if they're talking too much error.
Yeah.
You got to be living it.
Straight up, we don't talk about any medical stuff in this building. We don't drink any alcohol, and we don't talk about any illnesses.
Good.
They know.
That's good.
Those are a nice place for them to come there.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, you never know what somebody else is going through or thinking, and then you're sitting there going on about all your troubles.
And you're not helping them. Yeah, you're not helping them.
Thank you.
Because it's different. It's not just all one group of friends. Sometimes there's groups of people like strangers to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know what they're going through or what they're trying to clear their mind of.
Mm-hmm. It can be a heavy load.
So I just tell them that there's no talking about medical stuff.
Yeah, that's good. They came there to have fun with pottery and anything else.
Yeah.
Well, and also in my experience, people sometimes that don't believe in God or Christianity are thinking of a false concept of God, of some big guy up in a chair in the sky that they have asked things and asked things and asked things and they haven't gotten them or had them happen. And so it's understandable in a way. So I often spread that word that's not what God is, even though you don't want to trample on someone's, concept. But if they're having a problem with believing in it, then go for it.
Thank you. It's very important. It is why people reject it. It's their false concept they're rejecting, and you can't blame them for that. So got to fill it up with the right concept. Thank you very much. And I don't know if anything can do it but Christ's Christianity, Christian Science. And as we've said, the battle is not person, place, or thing. That's not error. Error, Mrs. Eddy says it very clearly. It's the carnal mind. And that's a huge difference. We're not battling people, sexes, genders, colors, races, religions. That's not what we battle. we battle the carnal mind with the truth. And the carnal mind is at enmity with God. So we have a right to do that. But you get all messed up when you start putting faces and people to it, start punching out people, then we're in trouble.
And I think, although I don't haven't listened to the music, but I think that this reaction to Taylor Swift, you know, I think her songs are a protest against the hypocrisy that she has seen and experienced
in
so-called Christian churches.
Yeah.
And the people who are complaining about it are probably the people who are guilty of it.
Guilty of it, yes.
Yeah.
So
it's very true.
So our children need to understand that there is a right concept of God and that the wrong concept of God should be opposed, should be rebelled against, because it doesn't do anybody any good.
But then you have to fill up the gap.
But you got to fill in the empty spot with the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't be a son of thunder about it. Just blow out of your eye and then you can help.
Right. Thank you. That's right.
Yeah. So no matter what's going on, if things are being stirred, the true one will endure. The true idea will endure and be still there at the end of the stirring.
Yes, and that's true of Christian Science, because we've been maligned quite a bit, and Clarence likes to quote that quote in Science and Health about what all kinds of things can go on, but the truth of this book will not be.
Oh, yes. It will forever be, and that's not exact quote, but it will forever be. It stands forever. I think it's on page 101 or something.
11 o'clock. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Uh-oh, 11 o'clock.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I didn't.
Oh, my, Mary.
Well, okay. The last question was, how meaningful is God's preservation? I think we kind of covered that with all our... Does anyone want to add?
Yeah, I just want to say one thing about that. I think for the first time, I was really thinking about how life was back then. No GPS, no roads, really, you know. And when they went out... And they were, for a long time, they were pretty nomadic. So when they went out, they really had to pay attention. And they had to trust God in a way that I think modern society kind of gets away with not doing. So that, you know, coming back to what Mary spoke about how they prayed before everything, you can see where that came from. It was vitally important that they kept themselves in the right place and then the right thought. So I don't know, I just really think that's quite interesting to think about.
Thank you. Yes, all these modern technologies, these watches, I think I mentioned, they tell you your heartbeat, your this, your that, how many steps you've taken. This woman in the store told me, you know, you get it for your great grandmother and it'll call the ambulance even before she hits the floor. I said, God does all those things. We don't need a watch to tell us all that. So, but that's to Jeremy's point. We look at all this stuff to tell us, and pretty soon AI is going to be telling us more than what we want to hear.
Yeah.
Who else will speak now?
Well, another thing is it's important to acknowledge God. If you've had any sense of preservation at all, acknowledge God. Please don't go get into the arrogant human mind and says, oh, yeah, I did it on my own or whatever. That's a dangerous one.
Comes before a fall.
Well, and in the ancient Hebrew days, there was a lot of faith for a lot of people. And that is why there were so many big, powerful signs and wonders, if you will, the parting of the Red Sea and things like that. We don't see stuff like that happening these days, but there's a reason why we don't see things like that happening these days. And it gets to the question, what is God preserving? What is God preserving?
Life.
everything that he has created, it sounds the same. It was very good, and it will always be very good. That's what he said.
Yeah, he's preserving his own image and likeness.
Yes. Thank you. Yep.
He's preserving himself in a way. And do we recognize that that's what we are? See, the ancient Hebrews, I don't think, recognized very well that that was what they were. Otherwise, they wouldn't have complained so much.
They put their altars on the mountains.
But a lot of people today don't recognize that about themselves either. And I wonder how many Christian scientists recognize that as for themselves.
Yeah. So the error in you is destroying itself, and you'll suffer for it till you stop
holding on to it.
Holding on to the error, disobedience. Yes.
But so why it's so important for us, first thing in the morning, to recognize I am the image and likeness of a good God, and I will have no other mind but his mind. I will have no other life but his life, and then stick with it. And, that's the best preservation that any of us could ever have. It's the only preservation that any of us could ever have.
We could go on about this one psalm for a couple hours. There's so much to it, and maybe we shall again, because there's no end to the protection of God. And the definition of keep, and keep is mentioned many times in that psalm, is to hold in one's power or possession, not to lose or part with, to have in custody for security or preservation, and to preserve from danger. All of those things, God keepeth you in perfect peace. He's keeping you. Let him keep you. Surrender to his care. And it will be quite wonderful.
Amen.
Yes, amen. Thank you.
Anyone else before we close?
Thank you all very much.
Well, thank you all.
Thank you all.
And keep your eyes out. We're going to have some more coming up, Bible studies.
Yeah, we'll have a few. Maybe one or two before Christmas.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you
all for joining us.
And have a wonderful day.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.